The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
IGN Playlist is a new home to your game library. Rate games, share lists, and log your game time powered by How Long to Beat. Sign up for early access today at playlist.ign.com.
Beyond and hello everyone, my name is Jonathan Dornbush and this is the first Podcast Beyond of 2022. I almost said the year wrong because that's how I deal with years, but it's the first one of 2022. And do you hear that? Do you hear that sound? There's actual PlayStation news from this week that we get to discuss on this show in a timely manner. I don't even know how to handle this, to be honest. I'm just really excited. We're going to spend 70 minutes talking about how excited I am and then 2 minutes on the actual news. No, we should get to the stuff that we do have to talk about this week. So before we get to that, though, I am joined by Jada Griffin.
Hello, hello.
Hello, glad to have you back. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too.
We're also joined by Mark Medina. Mark, Happy New Year to you as well.
70 minutes?
70 I've, minutes.
I've yeah. been on break for 2 hours or 2 weeks and you come back and the first I can't even talk. You want me to talk for 70 minutes, Dornbush?
70 whole
I was
minutes,
told yeah. this would be a 17 minute episode. So I've been lied to. Also, yeah, I'm nowhere near as emotive as Tom. I need to get it going.
The energy up. Come on. It's Wednesday morning. The first Wednesday. Is it the first Wednesday of the new year? I don't know. Anyway, of course, we are also joined this week by Tom Marks.
Hello. Been so long, but for some reason, Jonathan, it feels like yesterday.
Isn't that how time works these days? I mean, you and I see each other, you know, all the time yeah. outside of work. We just stare at each other off show. But no, we do have a lot to talk about this week. We are gonna take a little bit of like a wider look at what PlayStation has coming up in 2022 because it's going to be a very busy year. But PlayStation decided to drop big news on us, some I think unsurprising news in terms of a little bit of a reveal there, but some actual news at CES this week from PlayStation and Sony, and that's of course the Uncharted movie clip that we got to see in full.
Nope, that wasn't it. That's not it.
I was excited for.
Oh, you're right. It was the PlayStation VR 2. That was it. They did do that. That happened as well. Yeah, the next generation PlayStation VR headset, which they have been calling it for 6 months, has been named, and it is called PlayStation VR 2. We do have some details about its specs that we're going to dig into, and we also got the first announcement of a first-party game, which is actually a collaboration between two studios at PlayStation. But before we get there, just really quickly around the horn, anyone surprised it's called PS VR 2?
No. It's exactly what they kind of did with the consoles. They kept saying it was like the next-gen console, and then finally they were like, here's an Instagram post. It's called the PS5, and everyone's like, it's kind of the same with this. I've been calling it PSVR 2 since PSVR 1 came out, and so it's not surprising at all.
Yeah, yeah. I still really appreciate the pomp and circumstance Sony puts behind its names that are then mm-hmm. like the simplest possible names they can pick. Yep. It's admirable in a way I did not anticipate. But yeah, no, I'm fine with this. I don't need fancy weird names changing every time. This is nope. fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think, you know, they like the fanfare of doing these events and like, this is a big thing. And it's very simple, but it's a big thing. yeah. regardless of the name.
Yeah, it's the same way in which, and this was, you know, going back to our quick discussion of time not making sense. One of the last in studio episodes of Beyond was when they announced the name of the PS5 at CES, which was that big thing, as you were saying, Mark. Most people found out via like an Instagram post that it was called the PS5, but they came out on stage, were like, their console is called the PlayStation 5, and that was it. And we spun up 45 minutes of discussion out of that, I think. But
let's do it again.
Luckily this time, back then we only had a name, but this time we actually do get some specs and some details about it. The first thing that I do want to mention is something that they had said they were going to do in the past, but I think is worth just taking a second to appreciate. There is only going to be a single cord to get this headset to your from your PS5 to your PSVR headset. That is, I love the PSVR, but the reason I have not pulled that thing out despite being at home for the last 2 years straight is because I don't want to have to deal with that nest of cables.
Yeah. It's a nightmare.
It's time for Mark.
The new price tag. Whatever the new price tag is, that single cable is worth it on its own.
time for Mark to be a downer. That's one cord too many, guys.
Okay.
One cord too many.
I thought you were going to be like pro multiple cords.
No. So over Christmas, I got the Oculus Quest 2. What a machine that is. Zero cords. And even if you want to hook it up to your computer, AirLink, which is amazing. So when I saw single cord, I'm like, but at the same time, they're going for a visual fidelity that's incredibly high. So We'll accept it. The forgiving thing will be if it's like the Quest 2 and it's just a single USB-C cable that I can get like a 30-foot version of, then super good.
Yeah. It's and USB Type-C.
And the other nice thing about it being a USB Type-C is there's a USB-C port on the front of the system, right? So it's not even just like single cable. It's like you don't even have to go to the back of the system to plug it in. It's just going to be a really nice little quality of life thing.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
For me, though, it is actually going to hurt my quality of life because I have a expanded drive on the hooked into my using that USB-C port for all my PS4 games. So for me, I'm going to have to pull that out anytime I want to do anything VR. So that means I'm going to have to completely like do the whole thing of, do you want to remove this drive? Yes, I do want to remove this drive. Okay, now you can plug it in. And then when I plug it back in, I have to wait for it to recognize all my games.
And you got to definitely make sure that your VR games aren't on that drive.
So exactly. At the same time, which means it's going to have to stay on my PS5 drive or my new M2 that I installed over the break.
Nice. I was going to ask, have you done an internal upgrade yet?
Yep. I just put a 2 terabyte in over the break.
Hey, that's what I did, and I love it. I install everything. I don't even think about it. I'm like, do I want to play Assassin's Creed Valhalla 6 months from now? Might as well install it now. Get it ready.
I mean, that's the way I approach my backlog, too, but I need to do that install as well. But yeah, it will be very nice. Other than that, I use the USB-C port in the front for like headsets as well and stuff. So it'll be, you know, figuring out where to put that stuff. But yeah, like you were saying, Tom, the idea of having it just right there in the front. Mark, I'm really with you, like in terms of the ease of use of the Quest. Like it is just beautiful to be able to put that thing on and not have to worry about it, anything. I do think obviously here I'm assuming a little bit, but I would guess that the VR2 in the same way the VR1 did will offset so much of, you know, the actual power needs to the PS5 that like, as you were saying, to get this high fidelity, it's a small trade-off, but I think that one cord is much better than two cords that go into a small box that also has two extra cords coming out that need an additional cord to get power. It's a much better step up than from last time.
Well, because no matter how great
the PS5.
Yeah.
Right. The Quest 2 is great, but like it can't play games like, I don't know if it can't or if it just doesn't, but it can't play games like Half-Life Alyx or Boneworks and stuff like that. Like, because it is just, you know, running off its own hardware, which is just in this tiny headset. So I imagine if they're really wanting to push PSVR 2, they're going to need some of the PlayStation's power to be able to do it. And maybe eventually they'll come up with some sort of like AirLink thing. They have the the remote play.
Oh, remote play.
Like, so maybe they can figure out some sort of AirLink. Who knows?
That would be
but
very
the one
fun
cable's fine.
If you could remote play to your VR headset, that would be very cool. But anyway, to talk to what you were saying about the visual fidelity, we got some info about the specs of the system, so I'm going to just run through these a little bit quickly. But the display method, so it will be an OLED display. Panel resolution will be 2000 by 2040 per eye. Panel refresh rate will be 90 hertz and up to 120 hertz. Checking, and there will also be a 110 degree field of view, as well as foveated rendering. Some of those words I understand, some I do not. obviously, we're going to get, I think the fidelity here is, you know, just in layman's terms, a huge step up from the PSVR, you know, original headset. Tom, Mark, or Jada, any of you, you know, with use of VR headsets, what has been most impressive to you in the VR space, and what are you hoping this kind of lives up to on a fidelity level?
Games-wise?
Yeah, just like graphically, game-wise.
Probably, like, I mean, there are certainly like more kind of awe-inspiring games, but Half-Life Alyx is just the best VR game you can play, and its visuals are really, really incredible. I played that entire game on a Quest, Oculus Quest 1, with a link cable to my PC, and it was, which will be basically identical, right, in terms of like cable management, because it's just a USB-C also. And yeah, that game was really, really impressive. I think, I mean, one of the things that's interesting about these stats is like, as of now, right, because you never know how quickly tech is going to change, but as of now, apart from FOV, right, which is identical to the Quest 2, this is like the highest resolution, like kind of consumer level VR headset out there. It's higher than the Index, and it's higher than the Quest 2. So like, clearly, as Mark was saying, they're pushing for like cutting edge in terms of like, in a way that PSVR was great, but like obviously they were reusing those controllers, and there was a lot of it that was like kind of like bootstrap a little bit. And this is like, this feels like them being ambitious in a really, really exciting way.
Yeah, PSVR 1, when you look at the controllers for PSVR 2 and the specs, it's almost clear, we don't know for sure, that PSVR 1 was almost like a test. They're like, do people want VR on a console? Like, if we can provide games for it? And the answer is yes, people love PSVR. And there are some exclusives that I've never played, like the Iron Man game, stuff like that, that like people really, really like. So I think this is them. This is their answer to PSVR1's success, is building actual controllers that look like Quest controllers. I think it's also like, when you look at those controllers, you think this is them responding to, you know, what other people have done, right? Like VR controllers, when it was the Wands, you think, okay, this works totally fine. And then I remember seeing, what was the Oculus Rift, and you used an Xbox 360 controller or something like that. And then they came out with it was like the Oculus Touch. And I remember looking at those controllers and being like, what the hell? Like, those are so weird looking. And now they're so natural in a VR space that it seems like they're taking what they've learned and being like, yep, we need to go all in if we're going to do this again. And it seems like they are. Hopefully it pays off, because it looks really cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's a trend we see in pretty much every console generation as we switch between console generations, is we see companies test different things, like the Wii U with Nintendo. They had, you know, it was a console with a screen on the controller, and now we have the Switch. They saw what was good out of that. They tested that. Obviously, the Wii U didn't sell as well as they wanted to, but they had that idea, and they kind of put it out in the market so it wasn't super weird when the Switch was like, oh, this is just a better version. And we got that same thing with like the Xbox and the Kinect, where the Kinect then was included by requirement with the, you know, the Xbox One. But yeah, and I think it's the same thing with Sony and their PSVR. I think they're just kind of, you know, they're following the course that they've set. They planned this type of thing, I'm sure, years ago, and now it's just, they're finally able to bring it to fruition and show us all the leaps that they've come in technology.
Yeah,
I think what's insane is, sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think what's insane is the whole thing about VR is supposed to be like immersion. And the fact that they're putting the adaptive triggers in their controllers, like, that's going to be so insane to actually like grab something in VR and feel the weight of it and feel the like pull of it. That's going to be so fun. I can't wait for that.
And there is a specific feedback thing I do want to get to in one quick second. But anyone or Tom, I'm going to, I guess, ask you first and you can tell me if I'm completely off the mark. But just for those who don't know, since I mentioned it, foveated rendering is sort of an eye tracking technique, right?
Yeah. So foveated rendering is, I had to look it up too. It was not a term I was intimately familiar with by any means. This is going to have eye tracking, which as far as I know is going to be, again, like assuming it doesn't get beat to market by something because we still don't know when this is going to come out, but this will be the first kind of like consumer headset that'll have eye tracking, which mm-hmm. is really, really interesting. And I'm sure will become more common as time goes on. And foveated rendering is basically like it can see, it uses eye tracking to see where you're looking and like either increase detail or it can basically manipulate how it renders the game based on where you're looking, which is just really cool and probably is going to be one of those buzzwords we hear a lot. And then when you're actually playing the game, you're not going to go like, whoa, the foveated rendering is so good, right? Like no one's going to care about that word once it's out, but it will mean just like higher fidelity in practice, in theory.
Yeah. And
Tom, practice in theory.
Go ahead. I have a quick question for Tom based on your total knowledge of this new topic, this new buzzword. Uh-huh. Does this mean when I get in my tutorials for my VR games, I can just move my eyes to look up when it tells me to look up at this light to calibrate and look down? Am I going to be able to just do that, or am I going to still have to lift my whole head? I'm just wondering how lazy I can be in VR.
I mean, theoretically, they could use it that way, right? Like, I've used eye trackers just on PC before, and I'm actually a little bit nervous about this, I will say, because eye trackers on PC usually use, I think it's IR lasers, kind of like to see where your pupils are, and those like always give me headaches. So like, it's never something I've used, but I don't know what technology obviously they're using here. So I wouldn't jump to the conclusion that it would here necessarily. But the games that use eye tracking on PC, literally, it is basically just like if they want, they can use it as mouse input pretty much. So like, theoretically, they could, if depending on the way that they've coded this and the way that they've built it and how extensive they've built it, they could let you just use your eyes to just like, you know, not move your head and just kind of like look left or look right to make a decision or whatever. Like that stuff is theoretically possible with what they're talking about. Yeah.
It's either going to give you laser eye surgery or undo your laser eye surgery.
we'll get someone who has LASIK on the show and we'll see if it does anything to them. And I don't have LASIK, so we'll see what it does to my eyesight after we play. But no, in addition to that, just on the tracking note, and then I do want to get to the sensory feedback stuff. This is also going to have inside out tracking.
Yeah.
As well. So
it's going to track my insides.
It'll track your intestinal flow. It's going to be wonderful. It's
sucks
going
to be them.
It does. with the amount of Taco Bell we might eat, it's not going to be fun.
It's
this essentially will have cameras integrated into the headset, so we'll be able to track you from there, which the Quest does as well, I believe. And is really exciting compared to, you know, just using the PlayStation camera that we used on PSVR and PS4. But Tom, I know you're really excited about this.
Yeah. Conversation's hurting my eyes.
The distinction, right, is like the Index and Valve's headsets use these like outside trackers that are like these little boxes you have to mount in the corners of your room. And obviously that provides better tracking overall, but the ease of use of just having inside out tracking and not have like one of the most frustrating parts about using PSVR 1 was like if you turn around and suddenly your controllers are not in line with the camera and it has no idea mm-hmm. where you are. And like inside out tracking basically completely negates that, right? Like as long as your controllers are within view of the headset, which they almost always will be, it'll just be able to track them fine. So that's another thing that is just like a really small thing that is going to mean a lot in terms of how easy this thing is to just pull out and play and not worry about.
Yeah, which is a godsend, especially when you're packing this thing up, because presumably you don't want to just keep a headset always out in front of your TV all the time. So yeah, to be able to have such simple setup is super important. But in terms of that setup as well, Mark, you were talking about it, and I do want to focus on it for a second. The new controllers, which we had seen a few months back, are now officially called the Sense controllers. No surprise there with DualSense.
No.
It would have been funny if they had stuck with DualShock and then had to call these the shock controllers. But
well, can I say one yes. one little frustration one. I have with this whole naming convention?
Yes.
The DualShock controller is only one controller, and or the DualSense controller is only one controller, and the Sense controller is a pair of two. Why did
Tom come to your senses, man?
Come on, Tom.
I'm just saying. It's, the two controllers are the Sense, backwards. And the one controller is the DualSense. It doesn't make any doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's God. All right, now I'm broken with that. Now I can only think about that for the rest of the episode. Anyway, the controllers are going to, as Mark had mentioned, they're going to have the adaptive triggers, excuse me. They are going to have some of the haptic feedback that the DualSense has, even though that is only one controller. These two controllers will have that. It will be employing 3D audio, as well as what they call headset feedback, which sounds like there is a little bit of the haptics in the headset. And I did want to pull this out. This is from the PlayStation blog verbatim. They said, headset feedback is a new sensory feature that amplifies the sensations of in-game actions from the player. It's created by a single built-in motor with vibrations that add an intelligent tactile element, bringing players closer to the gameplay experience. For example, gamers can feel a character's elevated pulse during tense moments, the rush of objects passing close to the character's head, or the thrust of a vehicle as the character speeds forward.
So if I get hit with the butt of a gun,
is it going to make your head rumble? Yeah.
I like to melee enemies in games.
Even if I'm too close to an explosion, it's...
I mean, yeah, I guess there obviously it'll be up to the developers to program it so that it's not painful to your head. But that seems really interesting to me that they essentially are going to build in some rumble that will be more than just like the old controller rumble. Like it will be probably a little closer to the DualSense of I think the like idea of an object going by your head is a really cool thought of like, you know, an axe being thrown or something and it whooshes by your head or something. But I'm curious how you all feel about this addition to the sort of sense aspect of the DualSense and the PS5 and the PSVR 2.
Wild.
I mean, I'm ready. I'm just waiting for us to be able to go full dive VR one of these days. So I'm all for it. The more senses that we can add to VR, the better for me.
Well, these controllers only have one, so it feels like a step back. But
there's only one sense,
I think it could be cool. There are things about the DualSense itself, the controller, that I'm like, this is cool. I'm going to turn this off. I started playing Deep Rock Galactic last night, and the second I pulled the trigger and it was like pulling a Gatling gun, I was like, nope, I turned it off because I just don't super love that stuff. And for like shooters, right? And so if I'm playing a game and it feels like a bullet hit me in the side of the head or whatever, because you feel a little bit of a like, and I don't like it, I'm just going to turn it off. That's the great thing about it, is it's there if you want it, and you, I'm sure you can turn it off.
Mark, you've got to use cover. That's what cover based systems are for.
No, I wore a helmet. Okay. So I can take bullets. I'm fine.
That's how helmets work. Correct.
Yes.
That's
how
helmets work. Tom, what about you?
Yeah, I remains to be seen, right? I think it's cool that they're doing stuff like this. You know, I have a lot of respect for all of the different sort of things. Like, there's a lot of things you can point to in this PSVR spec list that's like, you can be like, wow, that like no other headset right now is doing that, right? Mm-hmm. And I have a lot of respect for that. Whether, again, like kind of like Mark was saying, whether it's actually functionally fun to use or not remains to be seen, see how it is actually used, right? But it's very, very cool that it exists.
Yeah. I certainly have no doubt that Team Asobi will figure out a fun way to use it right. in some capacity.
I didn't even think about that. We're going to get an Astro VR game. That would be so fun.
I've got to assume Astrobot Rescue Mission 2 or whatever they want to call it is got to be an inevitability.
Yeah, they had the sections of the first one where you had to like headbutt, right? So now it's...
Oh, yeah, you did. Yeah.
Now that's got rumble.
Now it'll headbutt you. Perfect.
I like that I had to physically do a headbutt to be like, yes, you're correct. I remember that.
I remember doing this.
The video version of the show is going to be very strange. But yep. Speaking of games, obviously, you know, PlayStation didn't reveal too much about the upcoming lineup, but we did get one announcement, which is one that had been rumored for a while. I had heard a little bit here and there about it, and so I'm glad to see it finally revealed. This is a jointly produced game by Guerrilla and Firesprite, the more recently acquired team. Who made the Persistence VR, which also had a non-VR mode. But this is Horizon Call of the Mountain. No colon in there. I know we used a colon in the past for Horizon Zero Dawn, and there wasn't actually one in there in the title. There isn't one again here. But anyway, Horizon Call of the Mountain is being co-developed by these two studios. It's going to be built specifically for PSVR 2, as far as we know. We don't have a ton of details about it. We just know it will go, quote, deeper into the world of Horizon. You're playing as a new character. You're not playing as Aloy. But I believe the PlayStation blog post did say you'll meet Aloy as well as some other characters within the world, both new and returning. And they'll tell us some more information about our protagonist later on. The first teaser sort of shows this perspective of the person and another character seeing a tall neck from the ground point of view. And whatever else this game does, if it's just a tour through the world of Horizon for 20 minutes, seeing a tall neck in that perspective just is going to be so cool.
It's kind of like a futuristic Jurassic Park. I mean, if they do that type of thing, we're just in the car, just on a rail. I'm sure there's going to be some type of gameplay element because, you know, that's if this is one of their big budget, not big budget, so to
flagship.
Speak, I'm sure it is, but flagship type titles for PlayStation, there's got to be more to it than just a tour, I imagine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would be fine if it's like an experience, but because I don't know how much like Horizon gameplay would translate to VR. Like,
yeah,
it's a lot of rolling with a VR headset on, but it looks cool.
Cable now, it's easier to roll.
Yeah, exactly. But I can't wait to see those monsters in VR. That'll be so fun. Seeing the tall neck, it's so tall. So that'll be fun.
I hope we get some elements of Forbidden West or like being able to go underwater and stuff like that. I would really love to see their underwater areas in VR. I think that would be super gorgeous.
Yeah, that could be. We get a sort of a sense of at least like, obviously, this feels like somewhere between what we saw from Horizon Zero Dawn and Forbidden West, you know, given that it's VR. But it still looks beautiful. The sort of amount of detail you see just in like the tall neck's foot as it passes by you, like they very clearly are trying to go all out with that. And so, yeah, whatever this experience ends up being, I know I'm saying experience, but as far as we know, it is a game that they are making, like a full game. I'm really excited, and I think it shows a confidence, at least in PSVR 2, that we need to get people to care about this thing, and it can't just be sort of unknowns or sort of experiences that look cool but don't really have a tie to them. Like, Horizon is one of the biggest PlayStation franchises now, and so to put this there feels like saying, we want you to make sure this, like, sells well and that people care about this. So I'm excited that this is one of the first things out the gate, at least, that we've seen. Tom, any thoughts on the Horizon first look that we saw?
No, I don't have like the highest expectations for it, but that doesn't mean I'm like, it looks really beautiful, but like,
yeah,
I always just feel like the first out of the gate sort of VR games like this are always usually just sort of like neat, right? Like, it shows off what it can do, but it's not going to be like blowing the doors off of anybody who hasn't already kind of seen VR in some capacity. But that doesn't mean it's not like, I think it's going to be bad or anything. Like, obviously, in a similar way, like, Astro's Playroom, right, is like, was that for the DualSense? And obviously that game was a ton of fun, right? So like, I'm not like holding my breath for this one, but it's very cool that, like you said, they've already sort of come out and planted a flag and said, we are going to support this with our main franchises is encouraging for sure.
Yeah. And I totally get what you mean. I mean, even with PSVR, I loved a lot of the early stuff, but it wasn't until like 2018 where we started seeing Astrobot and Tetris Effect and things like Firewall and Iron Man in subsequent years. So yeah, the fidelity and the complexity did definitely evolve over time. And even though obviously we're starting from a better point here, I'm sure we'll see that sort of natural progression as well this time around.
Maybe this is unfair of me, but this strikes me as PSVR2's Rhombus of Ruin, right? Which was a very fun VR game, but it was also very much like an intro to VR at that point, right? And I would not be surprised if they're using this as like a gateway to what PSVR 2 can do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm wrong. I could be completely wrong.
No, I agree, because it could give, you know, those maybe more casual consumers a reason, like, hey, you should want to try VR.
Right.
And, like, this is one of our big characters. This is one of, you know, you may love Horizon. Try this out. Maybe you'll love VR. And, you know, give, you know, as I think it's a good use of that.
Yeah.
Yep.
This is an excellent game to have when we're all able to go to stores again and put on VR headsets and try for 10 minutes before a kid convinces a parent to buy it. But yeah, it's Fire Sprite. They have a lot of experience with VR, so I have no doubt on that side things are well handled. And then Guerrilla obviously knows Horizon very well, so we'll sure. be able to hopefully the marriage of those two together will lead to something very fun.
Yeah.
But those are sort of the initial details we got, the one game that we saw. And so that leaves us with a couple of obviously big questions, including price and release date, which are unknown at this point. If you want to go based on the reveal of the name of PS5, we got that in January of a year and it came out in November of that year. You could argue the PSVR 2 will come out this year, but obviously I want you all to potentially be embarrassed in the future. So I'm going to ask you all, myself included, to come up with, I will give you a release month. You don't have to come up with a day, but bonus points for the day. Release day or month and price that you think this thing is going to come out at.
And I'll go first. Yeah. Mark,
yeah.
I think it'll be October.
Okay.
Wait, do you actually want me to say a day?
No, only if you're really confident about it.
No,
a day.
No, not at all. I think October makes sense. I think, you know, PlayStation doesn't do E3, but they always do some sort of showcase around that time. And they've already kind of said that they would show more PSVR stuff in spring. So I expect there to be some sort of E3 blowout for PSVR 2 and for it to release this holiday. I think it totally makes sense for it to come out this holiday. It's been in the works for a while, so I'm sure it's time.
It's fair. And price?
Oh my gosh, I don't know. So a Quest 2 is what, $300?
Mm-hmm.
And I think we established before the show that the PSVR was $250 when it launched.
It launched at $400 for the whole bundle.
Jeez, man. All right. But that honestly sounds about right. Probably around $400.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Jada, what about you?
So I have a really good luck with things dropping on my birthday. So I'm going to go with my birthday's November 17th. So I'm going to say there's going to be a midnight like launch thing November 17th, but it's going to fully release the 18th, the day after my birthday.
All right.
So I'm going to say it's that. I'm going full day and date.
Love it.
And I'm going to say $449. I'm going to go a little bit pricier. I think it's going to be that midpoint between the digital and the disc version of PS5.
Okay. Man, you're really lucky. Yeah, your birthday, it's a Thursday into a Friday. You have that perfectly lined up there.
And that's, I'm going to take like basically that whole like 2 weeks off.
As you should, because the PSVR 2 will be out then.
Exactly.
Right.
So, it's going to be lost. I'm going to be lost in the horizon.
Exactly. That mountain will call to you. And then, Tom, what about you?
I think in a normal, non-pandemic-y sort of era, I would go a little earlier with Mark. But I think probably November, maybe even early December, late November, early December feels more realistic to me just with like the global supply chain issues that will probably continue to plague this year. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I would be willing to bet holiday as well sometime. And then price is a little trickier. The Quest being $200 or $300 is really like, I think that's aggressive pricing from Oculus. So yes. I would probably also lean towards the $400 range for this, especially because it doesn't have the whole tech of an entire, you know, computer in it, but it does have a much higher quality screen and a lot more other sort of bells and whistles and that sort of stuff. So yeah, I think probably $400 sounds about right. I think if they start getting higher than that, it's like, missing the point of a console VR headset to a certain degree.
Yeah. Well, you just
reminded me how annoying it's going to be to get these things. That's just the world we live in now. Every time something new comes out, it's impossible to get.
Yeah. Yep. So. Well, this might have less might use less silicon than the rest of them because it doesn't have to process its own games.
That's true. Yeah, this is a weird one with price because as opposed to where they could sell the PSVR headset without it, because technically people had PlayStation Move controllers, but like who really did?
Right.
These are brand new controllers that you have to have probably to play most of the coolest VR things. So yeah, I think that will be the base bundle will have the headset and the two controllers. I'm going to say, just to be a little bit different, Jada, I'm going to say it comes out the week before you said. So I'm going to say November 10th into the 11th, because I think November is likely as well. But I'm going to say, weirdly, it's going to be $350 or $349.
That would be competitive. Nice.
Yeah, I for me, at least, it's like, I keep going back and forth of whether they're going to know that it's going to be a niche thing regardless, and so sell it for a bit more and get as much as possible, or sell it for a little bit cheaper because people are still going to be upset they can't even get your system to begin with.
Do you think we're still going to be struggling to find PS5s in November?
I do.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. It's like I start to get like physically mad about it that I walk into a Target and I'm like, why are there even spaces for PlayStation 5s here? Like, what is the point of this? Like, they're never going to be here.
It's not to get super down, but just based on the way that things have looked for the supply chain and the discussions around that worldwide, as well as just general talk about chip shortages and production shortages and the proliferation we have seen with bots and scammers and things like that, I assume it will continue to be tough through at least this next holiday. Unfortunately, I hope I'm wrong. Like, I would love to have a discussion in November where we're like, oh my God, 30 million people got PlayStation 5s. It was wonderful. But like, I am pessimistically expecting that to not be the case.
Well, the problem is scalpers, right? When you think of PSVR 2, it's like, is the demand going to be as high as just PlayStation 5? It really doesn't matter because the scalpers are going to buy every single one of them regardless. So they're going to be hard to find no matter what.
And that's why you got to stay tuned to IGN Deals, sponsored by Seth Macy. No, he didn't ask me to do that. But yeah, we'll see what happens. Thank you, Mark. We'll see what happens there. But I'm hopeful we get more PSVR 2 information soon. As Mark, as you were saying, they're saying spring was.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married. Let's hear them talk about it. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK, so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Hey there. Ever wonder what happens to all those amazing screenplays that never make it to the big screen? Well, wonder no more. Welcome to Table Read Podcast, where we bring those undiscovered gems to life. Picture this: talented actors giving incredible performances with the occasional laugh or blooper thrown in, produced by award-winning pros. From drama to comedy, TV pilots to feature films, there's something for everyone. And guess what? We release new episodes every week, so don't forget to hit that subscribe button. Table Read Podcast, where great stories finally get their chance to shine.
When we were to expect details, so hopefully we get to see a few more games, hopefully we get a look at the actual headset a bit more, and yeah, I'm excited for this. VR is always something that you know, isn't going to be the dominant part of the PlayStation conversation, but is worth continuing to focus on as we will into the year ahead. But 2022, regardless of whether PSVR 2 comes out this year, is still going to be very, very busy, and so I just wanted to kind of like take a brief look at the rest of this year, because both on the, I think, first party side, the console exclusive side, and the multi-platform side, like, barring things getting delayed, there will inevitably be some delays. This year still has the potential to, I think, be one of the busiest gaming years in memory. On the PlayStation side alone, as of right now, and PlayStation has been pretty good at revealing things throughout the year and maybe dropping surprises here and there, even if it's with third parties. But right now on the docket from first parties, we know we're getting Horizon Forbidden West in February, Gran Turismo 7 in March, and then God of War Ragnarok at some point this year. In any year, I would think that would be a pretty phenomenal lineup for any one publisher to put out. You know, obviously the final quality of these games notwithstanding, the potential there is so huge. Of the three, and granted, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say this is probably not the biggest Gran Turismo crowd at IGN, and I will probably check in with IGN Australia. But of those three, I guess, which are you most looking forward to? And Jade, I'll start with you.
God of War. Hands down. I love Horizon. Gran Turismo is fun for a couple weeks for me because I'm not a big simulation racer. But God of War 2018 just really blew me away with how they adapted the Greek mythology and everything around that. I love Greek mythology. So everything. I'm sorry, not Greek. I apologize. Norse. I love Norse mythology. I love God of War. So like everything Greek, Norse. I'm excited to see how it wraps up the tale, because I've said that this is going to be the end of this kind of chapter. This is going to be like kind of the end chapter for this story, and to see how they kind of potentially maybe set up the next pantheon of gods that we're going to see in the following God of War. But the new God of War looks amazing. I'm excited to see how Atreus has grown. I'm excited to see the new dynamic between an older son and, you know, the lessons he's learned from Kratos. But yeah, God of War, it looks fantastic from the trailer we've got. I cannot wait. And I definitely think we're going to get this year.
Yeah, that's one of the big questions. And after we go through this, I do want to ask about that. But Mark, what about you? What are you
doing? that's what I was going to talk about. So I put out a tweet on the first of the year, and I said my most anticipated games were Horizon, Starfield, Elden Ring, Zelda, and Tiny Tina's Wonderland. And a lot of people responded and was like, "What about God of War Ragnarok?" Well, a couple things. So to answer your question, Dornbush. To answer your question, the other one, that's my most anticipated game.
Yeah,
of course.
I can tell.
Yeah, I can't even remember the name of it. Horizon 7. That's the one. Horizon Forbidden West is my most anticipated game right now of any game. The game's going to be really, really cool, and every time I see it, I think, man, this is going to be so much fun. I cannot wait to play it. I love the original. But also, I am not convinced that God of War Ragnarok is coming out this year. Would not be surprised if that game got pushed back. In a world where, for one, the game's already been pushed back because it said 2021 originally. In a world where we haven't seen a whole lot of it, we saw a pretty lengthy trailer, and there's still a ton of time of this year left, obviously. But in a world where every game is getting delayed, almost every big game is like, hey, we need a little bit more time, pandemic stuff. And there's going to be the 2020 was the year where everybody went home. 2021 was the year that everybody stayed home. 2022 is the year where companies are trying to transition back into office, which is going to create more problems, I think, than if they were to just stay home, right? So I'm not completely convinced that God of War Ragnarok is a 2022 game. I see it more of a February, March of 2023 game.
Okay. And I do want to get to release predictions in a second. But yeah, but Tom, what about you?
Of most anticipated between
of
those,
the three, yeah.
God of War, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely for a lot of the reasons Jada said already, basically. I liked Horizon, but it just didn't like capture me as much as God of War did. And so Horizon looks beautiful, but God of War is just the one I'm more excited to play at this moment for sure. And then, yeah, unfortunately, I'm just not much of a racing game guy generally, but I'm sure Luke Riley in the Australia be screaming Gran Turismo 7 from the mountaintops. So
yeah, we'll have to record an episode of Beyond a little later to be able to catch them as we get into March to talk about Gran Turismo with them. But yeah, I'm in a weird place because God of War 1 is I would say probably my favorite game of all time. It's 2018 by one. I mean, not the original God of War. Numbers are hard. Okay. I cannot wait for Ragnarok. I am also a little bit split on the date, but the thing for me is what made God of War so incredible, I feel like they just need to kind of maintain in the sequel. I'm sure they'll surprise us and I'm sure there'll be things we don't expect, but I feel like at least from what I've seen, Horizon has a like higher ceiling to kind of reach toward. Because I think the first game is really great. I loved it a lot. There are some things that I think could have been improved, and it feels like the sequel is really addressing a lot of those. Whereas I felt that less about God of War. So I guess I'm just kind of like, I just hope God of War Ragnarok is satisfying in the same way that God of War 2018 was, whereas Horizon could surprise me in ways. Not that Ragnarok can't, but I'm sort of expecting it more from Horizon, I guess, at this point.
You said God of War needed to be. It totally confused me. You may have
okay, sorry. I just kept going. No,
I was like, I'm lost.
Okay, God of War. I'm good. God of War feels like a known quantity to me in the sense of like what the sequel could be. I feel like I have a pretty good idea, even though we've seen less of it. Whereas Horizon, I feel like they made a really good fundamental in the same way they did of like Assassin's Creed 1. I could see the jump to Forbidden West feeling a little bit like the jump to Assassin's Creed 2, whereas God of War, I'd be surprised if it made that jump just because the first game is so good. Not to say that the first Horizon is bad, but I just see the like the
this one seems like it is changing a lot of stuff.
And the way they're it seems a lot of like proof of concept stuff that they were getting down in terms of the way that you could take down enemies and the exploration, the things like that. And it's like, okay, they built all of that. Now they have so much room to improve on that. And just seeing the variety of enemies we're seeing, like I know we talked about at the end of last year, Mark, but like the snake is just so cool. And just the idea that they're going to be expanding on things in that way and with traversal and all that stuff. Whereas with God of War, I'm sure there will be things that surprise me and things I'm not expecting. And we have only seen 3 minutes and talked to the devs very little, but I just like, I will be very shocked to see what those major changes are because I feel like they had so much of those fundamentals, at least for me, kind of excel so well in the first game is kind of,
I feel like the formula for God of War, doesn't need to evolve too much for Ragnarok. I feel like they really nailed that change in formula and foundation when they made 2018, the addition of the Leviathan axe and the addition of Atreus as a partner. Like there's just so much stuff that they already laid the groundwork for in 2018's God of War that they don't need to go and reinvent the wheel for Ragnarok. So I feel like that's why I feel like we're going to get it this year. And I'll go ahead and jump into dates now.
Give me a date.
So
on her birthday.
God of War, I wish. With PSVR, there's going to be a God of War PR game. Throw the Leviathan axe like a god. I've already done their marketing slogan. What you call it? 2018 dropped April 20th. 420, baby. And so I'm going to invert it. And we're going to go 24, which means it's going to be August. Because if you go 12 and then 8, it would be August.
Okay.
4th, 2022. Okay. That's my
like that.
I'm so lost, but I'm with you.
So if you're thinking August.
Okay. You get it? Or I'm sorry, not August 4th, August 8th. Right? No, oh, August 4th.
So many numbers.
August 4th. I'll take That's it. What I want it. 8-4.
I'll take it.
8-4-2022.
That works. That works for me. However the math worked to get there, we got there.
Mm-hmm.
Mark, what about you? What's your delay prediction, I guess?
I'm sticking with it. I think it's spring. I think it's February, March 2023.
Okay.
And I know all the comments are going to be like, what? No, God of War is coming out this year because I want it. And it's going to be PS5 only because they listen to the fans. No, I think it's next year. But I'm also fine if I'm wrong, because I'm wrong almost all the time.
I mean, the thing is, even if it doesn't come out this year, we still have Horizon and Gran Turismo and probably some other surprises coming. So it's not like it's going to be a down year if it gets delayed. But
Forspoken.
And we got some third parties to talk about in a bit. But yeah, Tom, what about you?
So I really disagree with Mark.
Wow. Hey,
the taste of the comments already.
What is this, my Twitter feed?
I said respectfully, okay?
Oh, you know what? Yeah, that's the difference, because on Twitter, they don't give a fuck. They don't care about me at all.
I'm going, and don't at me when this is horribly wrong, but... I am semi-confidently saying end of April or first week of May.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The reason I'm saying that...
Wait, of this year?
This year. Yeah. Because...
That's 2 months away, Tom.
Yeah, you know. No, it's 3 months.
3-4.
Yeah, 3-4.
You're crazy. I'm going to at you right now.
Every God of War... Every mainline God of War game, including Ascension, has come out either in March or April.
Yep.
And God of War 2018 came out on April 20th, and its release date was announced at the end of January. So, them announcing the release date 3 months away at the end of January is, they already did that with God of War 2018. So, and yes, everything got delayed. But this game already got delayed. And yeah, games get delayed multiple times all the time. But I'm more confident that they wouldn't delay it out of 2022 because they already did delay it out of 2021. And then at the end of 2021, they showed us gameplay. So I'm more optimistic. And again, this could be completely wrong because I think all the points y'all laid out are completely valid as well, right? It could be very, very easily roll that direction instead. But I'm a little bit optimistic in terms of that we'll be playing this game, you know, in spring.
And that would be such a wild year, just beginning of the year for PlayStation.
Yeah.
If they were able to get that game out, which... worries me a little, only because now I love both consoles, so just don't even. But Xbox had such a hold on fall this year, where it was Forza and then Halo, that there were so many people that the big conversation was PlayStation needs to catch up. And it's because people completely forgot how many games that they released last year, but because they didn't have a fall game, it's Xbox is dominating. It would seem weird to me that they would try to front load again and then once again have nothing for fall, unless PSVR 2 is their fall thing.
Right.
Only because Xbox, we already know that they have a strong fall with Starfield, and I think Hellblade is going to be a fall game as well. So it would be a little worrisome for them to to front load so much and then once again bow out of fall.
See, the funny thing is, I'm way less confident Starfield is coming out this year than I am God of War.
That date felt very, very, yeah.
I'm not, because they announced Fallout 4, and then the first time they showed Fallout 4 was E3 2015, and the game was out 3 months later.
Sure.
Yeah, that's true. But also, Fallout 4 was, you know, just kind of an evolution of Fallout. It wasn't a whole new IP. So I think that's
right.
You know, that's going for it. I mean, not to, you know, knock the developers on it, but because they're obviously very talented people. But I think Starfield is going to be that February, March of next year.
I would not be shocked if it gets pushed. But yeah, Mark, just to your point of the conversation thing, I think it comes down to whether Sony cares, because I not to say it's the right or wrong approach, but I do think Sony has kind of been operating from a place recently of like, when we speak, people listen, and it kind of doesn't matter the timing. Right. That's the reason they don't go to E3, the reason they don't go to Gamescom in full force. You know, they Shuhei appeared at Opening Night Live around Gamescom and, you know, briefly, or was that E3? I don't remember. One of those and briefly appeared to discuss things. They had the Horizon trailer at the Game Awards. Like, they'll show up at things, but what Sony will speak when it feels like speaking. And so as long as they sold well enough for them, because obviously sales were a little bit more down, I think, in the last quarter than they had hoped. But if things are going well, they usually almost consistently left the fall up to third parties during the PS4 life cycle, save for like Spider-Man in September. So I really wouldn't be shocked if they still keep out of fall with maybe a surprise here or there. But just to put a button on it to continue, because Tom, your line of thinking was what I was going to say. So I am going to pull another move from the Sony playbook and say they are going to plan to release it. Whether or not it gets delayed, I don't know, but I think they're going to announce a release date for June of this year because they also love to release games in June, typically right when we're all busy about to go to E3.
That's true.
Yeah, that's true. June is a really big month for them, and whether it's been The Last of Us series or Ratchet and Clank, I believe last year was June, if I'm not mistaken, they do like using that window as well. It's impossible to find out, but they really like that June, especially for some of their biggest games. And so I think putting God of War there is not only just a statement that they're still confident in the future of the series, but also a good place where PlayStation players kind of know to expect something. So with Horizon most likely sticking to February, I wouldn't be shocked if it maybe gets a week or two delay, but like, I think it's going to pretty much stay there at this point. And Gran Turismo out in March, I feel like you give a little bit of room, and then God of War in June.
The if you want to go real like Pepe Silvio numbers on the walls, like,
oh, let's do it.
They released Horizon on PC in August, and then Horizon 2 is coming 6 months after that. They're releasing God of War on PC in January this month, and so you could say July is 6 months after that. So it could be that they're using the PC releases as like 6 month early marketing for the game, maybe.
I mean, that is in what I've said on the show is like the PC releases for them are marketing for their sequels and a chance to get extra life of these games. So I totally think you're right there in terms of like
July.
God of War coming out now means it's coming.
Here comes my August 4th.
Which is why I believe that they're going to announce something Uncharted this year. Because they're doing this big push, and I said it on either last show or the show before that they're putting out a PS5, making a big deal about it, and then also doing the PC version later because they got something Uncharted in the works, and they want to drum up the hype for it again.
We're gonna get an Uncharted VR puzzles like. Puzzle solving.
No.
Whether it comes soon or not, I'm totally with you in terms of like, there's no way the Uncharted series is done.
Yeah. No way.
That is a series that will get another entry at some point. Moving on from there, though, of those three, obviously, Mark, you had mentioned Forspoken, and we are looking at potentially a lot of really cool, both sort of AAA and more indie sort of exclusives on the PlayStation side. Again, that we know of, there will probably be more announced, but Forspoken, Ghostwire Tokyo, Sifu and Stray were the ones that came to mind for me. Most immediately. Forspoken is, I believe, May. Ghostwire Tokyo doesn't have a release date at this point. Sifu is in February. It actually had its release date moved up at the end of last year, so it's coming earlier in February. And then Stray is set for sort of nebulously 2022. The four of those, I think, will help, you know, pad out the calendar. We'll probably see some other games. There's stuff like Little Devil Inside, which got that state of play, but literally did not even have a release year put on it then. So who knows when that's coming. And then just sort of just to add to that, as we were all sort of hinting at, the rest of this year is also stacked. Again, other things might get delayed, but this year there are a ton of big third party games. And so just to give a quick shout to some of them, some of the ones we're most looking forward to, Tom, I'll start with you. What really is like sticking out to you? Exclusive or third party wise, like multiplat, what's most exciting to you?
I was tentatively gonna say Dying Light 2 for this, just because Dying Light 1 was such a like wonderful surprise, right? And that I'm excited to play Dying Light 2 as well. That said, I'm like really nervous about that game, just be given its development struggles and kind of the process it's gone through. So like, I'm holding my breath a little bit on that one. The game I'm really excited to just like see more of and play more of this year on PlayStation that, or that's coming to PlayStation, is Marvel's Midnight Suns, which is that like from the XCOM team Marvel game that just looks really wild. And like, it's obviously not just XCOM because they like not doing the grid and there's like cards involved, but it's speaking my language with all those things. And I'm excited to see a new Marvel game that's doing something different, because we had like, obviously this is not PlayStation exclusive, but we had Marvel, the Switch game. I can't remember the name, totally blanking on it now. But
Ultimate
that was
Alliance
like,
3?
Yes, thank you. Ultimate Alliance 3, which was like a co-op beat-em-up. And then we had Marvel's Avengers, which was like a co-op beat-em-up. And so I'm excited for like a Marvel game that's lots of Marvel characters, that is not just sort of like punchy game, right? Like a strategy game with different sort of gameplay it entices me. And I'm again, this could be another one of those games that's like, because what was it? I'm totally blanking the name also of the XCOM kind of spin-off game, Chimera Squad, that they made. That now, in retrospect, feels like it was experimenting with stuff that they're putting into this game, probably, with some of the character development stuff that they've already showed off. And so that game was only okay, but like, I'm excited to see some of those experiments expanded upon, potentially. I'm just, this one really looks interesting to me.
Yeah, definitely, as you said, even if Chimera Squad wasn't sort of like the apex of what they've done, they have such an incredible pedigree. It seems like they're sort of adapting the 90s like Midnight Sun comic line, and they seem to be very big fans of that based on sort of the developer talks we've gotten. I'm with you. I can't wait for this one. It was supposed to come out in March, but got delayed till a little later in the year, sort of a nebulous release date at this point. But yeah, this one could be a really fun, different take, as you were saying, sort of on Marvel games we've gotten recently. Jada, what about you? What are you looking forward to?
Strangers of Paradise is for me. That one's coming up pretty soon. I think that's like end of March, I believe, is the release date for that one. I love Souls games. I love Final Fantasy, and this is putting them both together. These are the developers, I believe they did Neo. And I just recently started playing that, and I'm really digging that. And I just, you know, I played the demo that they released, the second demo for Strangers of Paradise, back in like October or November. I'm super sold on just the combat, the gameplay, the customization. I was able to play co-op with my partner, like super easy for a Souls game, like getting into co-op. I mean, not the game was easy, because it definitely wasn't. But I really just love the systems and everything they've put in place. It'll be interesting to see how the world kind of evolves and what other, you know, kind of characters we see show up. Cause like we see Garland show up, as one of the villains in the demo, and so I'm interested to see who else we get to, you know, what other famous characters. I got to see Co-Worlds, I got to see Bombs, I got to see all types of different enemies that are Final Fantasy, and I just love it in this action format. So I've spent, you know, playing a lot of turn-based Final Fantasy, and so like Tom is looking forward to something slower paced for the Marvel type RPG. I'm ready for some more faster paced things like Strangers of Paradise to kind of fill that itch between scratch that itch between Final Fantasy VII Remake Part 1 and Part 2. So
yeah, this one looks really cool. It is funny you mentioned the Garland thing. It feels like, based on some comments Nomura was making, they really hoped that was going to be a surprise in the game, and then they just kind of put it in the trailers, and it felt like that I've been working on this story and you just tweeted it out sort of responses. But it still looks really cool. Hopefully the game wasn't sort of just built around that twist. But yeah, I played a bit of the demo, didn't do co-op, but it was a lot of fun. And I sort of got to a point where I was like, okay, I don't want to invest too much time in the demo when I'm just going to play the full game. I'm really excited for this one as well. And as you said, while we're waiting for Remake Part 2 and 16 and things like that, this seems like a very cool sort of like midpoint to jump into. Speaking of Souls likes and Souls games in general, Mark, you're looking forward to something.
Yeah, Elden Ring is going to be my world when that game comes out. Every Christmas break, I really dive into something. And this year it was the Souls games. I played so much Dark Souls, the original remastered, because I never played the remastered version. And it is so much fun. And I never played Demon's Souls back when that came out. And so Dark Souls remastered, I'm playing co-op with a friend. And so yes, if she's not on, I'm not playing it really, because that's how co-op in that game works, is you can't really progress too far without the other person because it's not drop in. And so when I'm by myself, I'm playing Demon's Souls, and Demon's Souls, for one, the prettiest game I feel like I've ever seen. Holy cow, that game is so good looking.
Yeah.
And it is so much fun. So I cannot wait to dive into a modern, beautiful open world Souls, you know, Dark Souls 4 with a compass. Thank God there's a compass.
And a map.
I can't wait for this game. Yeah, exactly. Like, it's doing everything. It's the next step of evolution for Dark Souls to me. Is they could have gone Dark Souls 4 and just made another, like, you know, Metroidvania type of game, and I would have loved it, and I would have played it, and everybody would have had a great time. But this seems like that next step, and I can't wait for this game. And a couple of news stories broke over the Christmas break where Miyazaki was talking about how they were intimidated by how good Demon's Souls looks, and they felt this like sort of pressure to try to make Elden Ring look. For one, Elden Ring looks gorgeous.
It does.
For two, it's open world, so it's a little bit different there. And for three, I think everybody just wants this game to play great, and people have already played it, and they say it does. So, like, I just, this game is going to be everything I want. I cannot wait. Look at that horse. He just jumped 1,000 feet in the
air. Horse can do a double jump, right?
Yep.
It's amazing.
Yep.
What else do you need in a game?
I double jumped into the ocean trying to hit one of those air drafts during the
nice.
I wouldn't recommend.
Yeah, fair enough. Unless the ocean holds all the secrets of the game. But yeah, this one is going to probably dominate a lot of the conversation. It comes a week after Horizon, which is,
right,
you know, Horizon going up against another massive open world game. Never happened to that series before.
What I'm hoping for is get Horizon, blast through it. Like, not that I want to disrespect the game at all, but I think you could probably get through it fairly quickly, and then have in time for Elden Ring. Also, everybody knows, it's no secret, we work at IGN, so when we get these games, it'll be a little weird. So it's not going to be like a whole, you know, like, it's a week before it may be, you know.
Oh, you haven't times, already been playing Horizon?
I have to wait. I'm going to personally have to wait for my Horizon. I bought the Regala edition, that $300
nice
monster collectors.
Oh, so wow.
It was one of the few PlayStation franchises I don't have like a statue or something on in my collectible list. So I was like, this is the perfect time to get something Horizon. So yeah, I have to wait.
We tried to get
that ships.
We tried to get the Elden Ring special edition, and it impossible. It like crashes websites. Like, so hard.
Yeah. This one, I'm very excited. As someone who also just within the last year or so, because of Demon's Souls, was pretty much my start into Souls games, has really gotten into them. I know they're obviously very much not everyone's cup of tea, but yeah, I guess it's going to be so fun if what everyone has said about it lives up to.
Did you beat Demon's Souls?
I did beat Demon's Souls. Yes. Yeah.
You did. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. From what I'm hearing conflicting reports. My brother-in-law is one of those, like, he knows everything about Dark Souls, right? He just knows everything about that game. He's like, oh, you're in Anor Londo? I know how to get there in 30 minutes. And you're like, man, it took me 19 hours. He says that Dark Souls is like easier than Demon's Souls, where the person I'm playing with, she says that Demon's Souls is leagues easier than Dark Souls. That Dark Souls is way harder. So
my only thought is Demon's Souls can be much easier if you go all in on magic, which I did for my first run, because there's a spell that you get in the magic class that is like ridiculously overpowered.
Yeah.
If you level it up, and that can make boss fights nothing, because you can just stand back and kind of throw volleys at them, and it's nothing.
So I'd say Demon's Souls is tougher if you're playing it like a traditional playthrough, like a first playthrough. It's tougher, but it's easier to exploit things in Demon's Souls than it is in Dark Souls, whereas Dark Souls has a more kind of balanced difficulty curve. regardless. You think you can try to cheese things, and some things you'll be able to cheese in Dark Souls series, but not always.
Oh yeah, I on my 17th attempt of fighting Ornstein and Smough, I was like, I know everything about these guys, and then he all of a sudden Ornstein just like backhands me, and I was like, he never did that once in 17. Where did he get this move? Like, yep. What the hell?
The fun of a Souls game when they don't use your moves. I would say Demon Souls if you're using the magic, but I think Jada's on the money with if you're playing them sort of equally, probably the other way then. But I can't wait for Elden Ring. I'm sure we'll be talking about it a lot on the show. We'll also probably try to bring in Mitchell to get his advice on he and Jada can coach us on how to actually get through half the game. But other than that, just quickly to mention on my end, we're in this weird situation. I wrote about it in sort of a preview of 2022 piece that Mark also did the edit for on the PlayStation side of. WB Games has four potential games coming out this year, and I would not be shocked if one of them gets delayed. But right now, I am really, really hopeful that Gotham Knights is awesome. Obviously, sure. Rocksteady has the pedigree with the Arkham Knight trilogy, or the Arkham trilogy, excuse me, and WB Games lasted... what was that one called? I can't even remember.
Origins,
thank you.
The one where they
Which I... definitely think had some open world fatigue problems going on with it, but I think the story was really well done, and I think their approach to Bruce and the villains in that game was excellent. And so if they're applying that to a wider view of the Arkham, or of the Batman universe, and introducing the Court of Owls, which is just a phenomenal villain arc in the Batman comics, like if they're able to pull all that off and make it really interesting and spooky and exciting and make you feel powerful against all these enemies, I'm hopeful for this one. It's again, it's still to be seen what the like experience of playing it is going to be like with progression and things of that nature, because you can play as one of four different Bat family members, because Batman is dead. He's definitely not dead, but we'll see what happens there. But I think their approach to Gotham and their approach to like having these villains have sort of these sectors that they're in control of, and you having to go and approach them the way you want to, could potentially be really awesome. We'll see how that one plays out, but I think that one also probably is most likely to come out this year. But we'll see. There's also Lego Star Wars, Hogwarts Legacy, and Suicide Squad from WB Games, so we'll see which of those four actually comes out. But this year is ridiculously packed, and we're gonna have a ton of those games to cover hopefully in the months to come on the show. But before we get to covering all of those, I do want to briefly just mention the games you can actually play this month on PlayStation Plus. I do want to give those a quick shout out. They're currently available to download right now. The three games are Deep Rock Galactic, Persona 5 Strikers, and Dirt 5. Now, if I'm reading the run of show correctly, Tom, you are the only person on the show who has played the Deep Rock Galactic, correct?
It's I don't know true. What happened there. Wait a minute. Wait a damn minute.
Even though Mark mentioned earlier in the show that he had played some Deep Rock Galactic, I'm pretty sure, Tom, you're the only one who has played Deep Rock Galactic.
Tom's just going to go through and resolve all my comments. You haven't anymore.
But no, this is a multiplayer game that has been available on other platforms, PC, Xbox, I believe, is making its PlayStation debut on PlayStation Plus, which is always great for a... this is a cooperative multiplayer game, if I'm not mistaken, correct?
Yeah.
I know you... Sorry?
Said play this game.
I know you both have played, but Tom, I just want to start with you. You've told me to play this game for a long time, so I just wanted to start with you. What do you love so much about Deep Rock Galactic?
Yeah, and if you want to play it on, like, I love this game so much, I've played this game on and off through its early access period, and then also when it came out of early access, I played a bunch of it all on PC, and like I would play more of it on PlayStation with you because I like it so much. Like, it is you're gonna look at it and you're going to be like, these graphics are kind of weird, right? Although maybe in the Minecraft generation, that doesn't really matter. But like, it is so much more than it looks on the surface. It's basically kind of like structured Left 4 Dead-ish style, where you are like four people co-op going into a place to complete an objective. Except in this case, you're all space dwarves and you get launched onto an asteroid underground to mine out a bunch of minerals, and there's a bunch of other different types of objectives, and it has completely deformable terrain, and then you got to get all those things. Usually the most basic thing is you mine a bunch of minerals, you put them on a thing, and then you get back to your escape pod to leave. And there's some persistence with like the minerals you collect, let you you level up your characters. There's four different classes that you can level up different parts of them. You can customize them. You can get different equipment. But it's like all in-game progression. It is just immensely satisfying. The gunplay when you're fighting these hordes of bugs while they're coming at you is really, really fun. Like it is just a I will say it is significantly, significantly more fun with friends. But the thing that is so exciting about this being on PS Plus is that it's like you should just convince your friends to try this game a little bit, right? Like just get three buddies and just try it because it is really, really, really fun.
Yeah, that's what I did last night was my wife and our other friend. I was like, yo, it's 2 gigabytes, you know, just download it really quick because the game is procedurally generated. Every time you like the missions are procedurally generated. They are on a timer that will change every so often. The missions, the ones that I've played are largely the same. It's like collect two types of minerals, one being the secondary objective. Is that correct, Tom? Like
they start simple and they get wider. So like initially it's just collect a couple of types of minerals. Then there'll be like there's an escort mission where you have to like escort a giant drill to like this egg thing, and while it's cracking this shell, you will like get attacked on all sides. There's like weird, crazy boss fights you can do. There's missions that are like killing dreadnoughts, which are giant bug creatures. There's missions where you have to install these like pumps on geysers, and you have to manually route the pipes from like your ship all the way to the different pumps, which is really fun because you like deform the terrain in very specific ways, and then you can grind on the rails like Sonic to get back and forth in the pipes. Like it's there's not like a ton of mission variety, but like there is a decent amount once you start getting into it a little deeper.
Well, and the fun comes from like the gameplay, like Tom said, the terrain, you can manipulate it in any way, you know, break through it and stuff. And so they're one of the early missions is like you have to get these fossils. And my wife is playing as a dwarf that could grapple onto the wall. Right. So for me, every time I found a fossil, I would have to like dig into the wall and like make stairs to get my way up there, where she was just like Spider-Man would grab it. And then there's also the like joy of splitting up and being like, you go this way, I'm gonna go this way, and getting, and then it's like, oh, a swarm's coming, and you're like, great, now we have to like try to meet up, because it's more beneficial to kind of spread apart and each look in different spots. But at the same time, there is a lot of strategy on staying together, because there's more flares, and every class has different abilities to make it where they can grab things better. I was not the engineer, but the other one, the guy that has the drill for hands.
Right.
And so when you need to get through the wall, he could just like, and just, you know, go through the wall. Yeah. But it's fun, it's free, and it's 2 gigabytes.
The last two things I'll say, because I know we're running out of time, is the co-op aspect of it is really great, because like you were saying, there's somebody that can grapple to the wall, but then a different class can lay out like shoot, like deployable platforms on walls. Mm-hmm. So like there's a lot of coordination that you can do of like, okay, I'm going to shoot platforms below all of the high minerals, and then you can go grapple up and get them on your own. And like, then the other thing that this game does really cool is that the entire world is just pitch black most of the time.
Yeah.
And you have to constantly be sending out these recharging flares that light up different aspects. And like one of the classes can light up stuff better. Sometimes there's like natural pockets of light. And so it's like, I haven't really seen a game use light in the way that this does, and it makes all of the gameplay footage of it online look terrible because it's all just black. But like in the moment, it is one of the coolest aspects of this game for sure.
Also, if you don't have friends like many of us and you are playing by yourself, you get a little robot friend and he can
fun solo.
Help. Yeah, he can help you mine and he'll light up areas and stuff like that.
Yeah, nice. I can't recommend this game enough. It's Deep Rock Galactic is really, really fun. I'm really excited it's on PS Plus.
Yeah, I'm excited to jump into it, and it only took it being free on PlayStation Plus to play.
You know, I think it's one of those ones I've been looking at for a while, but like now that it's free on my PlayStation right in front of me, I don't have any more reasons not to play it.
Yeah,
exactly.
You are out of excuses.
That one's available. Oh, go ahead, Jada.
I was going to say, just, you know, Mark just needs to invite me to play. You know, obviously he was playing last night and I was on my PlayStation all night and didn't get a game. And
damn, I had a full team. I'll hit you up. Wait, are you playing Halo Infinite? This is just as
how
an
dare
aside.
You? How dare you?
No, I played it. I played through the campaign for our wiki. I grabbed all the Spartan cores and did all that stuff for our wiki. So I'm done with Halo Infinite.
I love that this just turned into like a looking for player sort of.
Moe's looking for infinite players to play with. So.
Deep Rock Galactic is on PS4 and PS5. Dirt 5 is on PS4 and PS5, and then Persona 5 Strikers is on PS4, backward compatible on PS5. Dirt 5, I have not played, but I have heard good things about. I don't know if anyone here has played.
I didn't play the first four, so I don't want to be confused.
Fair enough.
It's a very important storyline.
I've heard good things from people who like Dirt.
Exactly. And then Persona 5 Strikers is the sequel to Persona 5, and I don't know how it will play if you haven't played Persona 5, but you should play Persona 5 because it's a great RPG.
That's actually on my list for this year. I spent all of
Persona 5.
I spent all of last year playing FF15 because it was one of those blind spots I hadn't finished, and I platinumed it over the holiday break, so now I have space in my RPG lineup to finally start Persona 5.
Nice. I've
never started it. Royal.
Play version. Royal. Yeah, play Royal. Yes.
Okay.
And, you know, perhaps there's a podcast I could tell you about after the show that you could listen to while you play. Other than that, those are the three games currently available on PlayStation Plus. They went live on January 4th, so they'll be available until Tuesday, February 1st. So download those, add them to your library. Just make sure you own them, even if you don't end up playing them anytime soon. Other than that, do briefly just want to touch on stuff because we did have a few weeks off. What have y'all been playing during the time off? Jada, I know you've been playing a lot based on what you put down on the run of show. So just briefly, because I know we're short on time, what were some of your highlights from your break?
Let's see. Final Fantasy VII Remake. I went through and got the platinum for that, plus played through the intermission DLC, which nice. Was so good. I did not expect it to go as far as it did. Aerial Knights Never Yield was a really cool, just like endless runner, not endless runner technically, it's just a runner with stages, but amazing soundtrack, really great game. Highly
the score
recommend.
Is so good. Yeah, the score that is music's amazing.
There's I was talking with the developer Aerial Knight himself about it. He's got DLC that's coming out for it soon, so oh, nice. Be on the look for that. So that's really cool. Serial Cleaners. I played the first one since Serial Cleaners 2 got announced last year. And so that was a lot of fun. And then Plague Tale. Plague Tale is the other one I will highlight in this spot. Nice. I was surprised by how good that story was and just how good the gameplay was. It was kind of almost Last of Us-esque with that kind of semi-stealth action story and gameplay. And so I'm really excited for, what is it? The sequel's called Requiem, I think.
Yes.
Coming out this year. Super excited to see what they do with that story. Highly recommend playing that if you haven't.
Yeah, I still need to get to that one. Never Yield, I am stuck on the one trophy for that like bonus DLC, like in-game world that you have to get. That's the only one left.
I actually have a tip for that.
Ooh, we'll get to that in just a second. Mark, what did you play over break?
Yeah, I mostly talked about it. Dark Souls, Demon Souls. I'm still playing Halo Infinite basically every night. And I played Forza Horizon 5 with some friends the other night. And I forgot that game is fantastic. And then Wordle. Playing Wordle every day.
Yeah.
But so has the world.
On that Wordle hype train.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Tom, what about you?
I've been playing Persona 5 Royal and also Forza mostly over the break. And then the other thing that I finally was able to get back into, because I had to take a break because of how busy end of November, early December was I've been playing Yakuza from the beginning because I played Like a Dragon all the way through and loved it. And that was my first Yakuza game. So I've been playing Zero and I managed to get back into that a bit. And nice. I'm really enjoying it.
Awesome. That is...
I was going to say, I got to look up the order for those because those always have been caught my eye. I just haven't gotten around to them. So I got to look up the order to play through those too.
There's some debate about whether you Like a Dragon, you can just start with pretty much. But also there's debate about whether Zero or One is the better one to start with. But overall, I heard that Zero was a good place to start because it was also kind of like a slightly more modern game. Right. Mm. So, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, that is a series I also have wanted to make time for and maybe will this year because there's no other games coming out this year. Nope. And then, yeah, just on my end, same, pretty much played basically Wordle every day and Persona 5 Royal. I'm finally playing the Royal content and it's really fun. It's so good. I love Persona 5. You should all play it so you can play Persona 5 Strikers. Anyway, Jada, we do, as we had mentioned before the year wrapped up last year, we do want to start integrating trophy tips into the show as much as we can. And as you mentioned, you do actually have a tip for us related to Never Yield. If that's the one you want to give, if there's another, let me know. But what sort of tip do you have for us this week?
Yeah, so I picked up 11 platinums in the last 2 weeks of the year.
My God.
To 50 on the year, or 50 on total for my account. But Aerial Knight was one of them. I believe it was like 45 or 46. Either way, the easiest way to get the trophy we're talking about is unlocking the final costume, which yes. In order to unlock this last costume in Aerial Knight, you have to complete the bonus minigame that you can sometimes get in between levels. You get into this minigame by finding a coin hidden in the level. Not every level has one, but as soon as you finish that level, it'll throw you into the minigame, and then you can play that minigame. The trick is you don't get to retry the minigame if you die. If you fail on that run, you have to replay that level, recollect the coin, and then go back in the minigame. It's a little cumbersome. It sucks. Like, it's so hard to get into the, or not hard, but time taking to get into that. My best recommendation is to play level 3 right before you jump off the bridge into the highway for where you're dodging traffic. Do a high jump to grab the coin, and then once you get into the bonus stage, start to like kind of either look it up online or memorize and write down the pattern of how things go, because the level goes really fast. If it inverts the stage, it reverses the stage constantly as you're going through it. So the trick is, there is more slides and short jumps than there are high jumps, so you're not going to need. So be ready with those two over the high jumps.
Okay.
But you can, if you do the third stage on like the medium difficulty, you can usually run through the stage in about a minute and a half, I think is my best time so far. So it's really fast to get back into that mini game. So you're not like getting that, you know, losing that repetition and losing that kind of streak and getting further and further in the bonus mini game. I do have one other bonus one. Because this is one that will keep people out of platinums for Final Fantasy VII Remake. The pull-up minigame. I'm sure this is something that many people have seen online and have troubles with. When in chapter 14, when you're playing Tifa, you're going up against Jules doing who can do the most pull-ups. The trick is turn off your music and turn off your voices. Only leave sound effects on, because that'll help you kind of eliminate some of the background noise. And then also as you are playing the mini game, where it's, you know, pressing X, circle, triangle, or square, say the directions out loud, not square, triangle. Say left, right, up, down, left, right, up, down, left, right, up, down. It'll help you with your pacing, so you when the buttons fade off the screen, you'll have an easier time keeping track of where your button is. So
I like that. I got that one a while back, but I spent a very frustrated, I think I spent like several hours trying to get that one.
Oh yeah, that one is so, tricky. Yeah.
Those are all very good tips, and thank you for the personally the Aerial Knight tip is just that was just for me, but I appreciate it for everyone else out there listening. And yeah, hopefully I can get that platinum by the time we record next time. But thank you for those. We are running out of time. Mark, I know you were mentioning you did have a holiday story, but are you?
Oh, no, I'm good. It was more just about Dark Souls, and I talked about Dark Souls plenty. We're good to go.
Well, in that case, I'm going to just put out a general call then for memory card stories. Please, if you have a wacky, weird, sad, happy, whatever memory of your PlayStation gaming life that you want to share on the show, remember to please keep it a bit short. But if you want to share that, please write into beyond@ign.com with the subject line memory card. And we'll read those on the show each and every week. But that is going to pretty much wrap us up for this week's episode. Jada, Mark, Tom, anything you want to plug before we wrap up? Anything people should check out on IGN coming up? Or we're back in the new year and there's not much yet to say.
We're going to be doing a First Friday AMA on Instagram this Friday, as it's the first Friday of January that we're back at work. So keep an eye out for that. And I expect to see each of you three on there answering some questions from the community.
Oh, no.
That's right. Putting you on the spot.
She's got us in work. Fine. Mark, anything from you?
No, I'm enjoying the peace until February comes.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Tom, same on your end?
Pretty much.
yeah, it's going to be a very busy year, but January is a little bit lighter for now. But anyway, that is going to pretty much wrap us up for this week's episode of Podcast Beyond. Jada, Mark, and Tom, thank you so much for joining me for this week's first episode of the year and a very fun one to start it all off. Thank you to Red, our producer, for, as always, making the show happen. And thank you to everyone out there for listening and watching. We hope you're safe. We hope you're doing well. We hope you had a good new year, and we're looking forward to talking about a ton of really exciting PlayStation stuff in the coming months. But until then, as always, beyond.
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 Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.